Committee for the 16th of February, 2015. Okay, thank you all for coming on such a gorgeous day. Hopefully you had a nice weekend. What we're going to do is we're going to be hearing two bills, and then we're going to be gaveling out and gaveling back in. So it's kind of an in and out thing, because we have two legislators that have other committees that they are going to. So I'm going to open a concurrent work session for House Bill 2186 and for House Bill 2648. A public hearing on those two House bills. Yeah, Richard, if you could read it.
I will. Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 2186 provides that core teaching standards apply to public charter schools, and it takes effect on the 1st of July, 2016. And House Bill 2648 establishes the outdoor education account for the purposes of providing outdoor school programs. It appropriates monies from the general fund to the Oregon Department of Administrative Services for deposit in that account, and it declares an emergency effective July 1, 2015.
Okay, we're doing this because Representative Comp is speaking on both bills and Representative Johnson is speaking on one. So, Representative Comp, why don't you speak on both, and then we will hear from Representative Johnson.
Okay, thank you this afternoon, Chair Doherty, and at the Education Policy Committee. It's nice to see all of you. Used to sit in this room and do a lot of debating. Chair Doherty and members of the committee, thank you for holding the hearing on House Bill 2186. For the record, I am Representative Betty Comp. I represent House District 22, Letts Woodburn, Jervis Brooks, and we're just right at our southern boundary here at the Capitol. So I can't claim the Capitol, but Senator Courtney can. So in 2011, we passed a bill that was very important. It had to deal with professional development for teachers. It was Senate Bill 290. And regretfully, as we worked on that bill, it appears that we did not have clear enough language that the bill would pertain to all teachers in our state. Charter schools were not included in the professional development that was included in Senate Bill 290. Oregon school districts are now implementing new educator evaluation systems to provide ongoing professional learning, growth, collaboration, with the goal of continuous improvement. If we don't have well-prepared teachers, we won't be able to serve our students very well at all. House Bill 2186 ensures charter schools are included in that professional development.
Okay. Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. Good to see you all again. It's the first time I've had a chance to see some of you behind the dais, but you look pretty good. And you've got a wonderful leader here, of course. So I, too, would like to weigh in on House Bill 2186. And I was just hearkening back to 2011 when we passed Senate Bill 290. That was a pretty landmark effort in our efforts that session to begin to really implement some reforms for education. But specifically, it's targeted, for me anyway, it's targeted around the idea that I think every student has a Bill of Rights. And one of the preeminent rights is to have an effective teacher in every classroom. And that really was the focus behind Senate Bill 290. We passed that bill in that 2011 session. It created a task force to go out and do some work on this topic. We came back then in February of the 2012 session and did a lot more work trying to put some flesh on the bones, if you will, and really put some meaning into what that policy was all about. And at the end of that work, then at the end of that session, then the state board wrote into rule the guidelines that have become the teacher effectiveness or educator effectiveness network that we currently have today. So it's been on the books now, and it's been in effect for a couple of years. And I can tell you from my own district in Hood River, this is really paying some wonderful dividends, because we have been able to provide some incredible professional development for teachers to help them be all they can be and identify places where they need some help in their professional lives, as well as begin for the first time to have a system that truly allows them to set professional goals for themselves, but also growth goals for their students and so forth. And really appreciate where we are now. You have to look back to where we were prior to Senate Bill 290, because at that point in time, effectively, a teacher evaluation was basically a satisfactory, unsatisfactory, or pass-fail. And I would really challenge you to think of how many other professions in the world don't have a substantive, thorough evaluation process for the employee. So we have that in place now, and as I said, it's paying great dividends across the state. I had a chance to hear some board members and employee groups from Ben Lapine talk at the OSBA conference this past November in Portland about how, over the course of being a class district, I think this might be their fifth year being in the class district process, but they now are at the point where they've developed their evaluation process, management and labor, so totally buy into what they're doing, and next year they're actually going to be offering an alternative compensation schedule for new teachers that will give them the opportunity to have their step increases, not based on breathing or longevity, but based on actually how they fare in this evaluation process. And there's a lot of excitement amongst folks to see something new. So for that reason, I think it's really important that we provide this opportunity for charter teachers to participate in this as well. Here's one caveat I need to put in there, because I've had some negative comments directed at me for being a part of this bill, because people think I'm doing this because I don't appreciate charter schools. Not true. Not true at all. I'm a huge advocate of charter schools. But as some corroborating, not evidence, but just information, I had Department of Ed pull the list of this dates back to 2012-13, bottom 5%. These are focus and priority schools, okay? These are all the bottom performing 5% of schools in the state of Oregon. They've got 70 schools on this list, and 24 of these are charter schools. And I just point that out to say that just because we have a charter school, and I totally approve what they're about and the flexibility they have, it still is no guarantee that charter schools don't need some academic help and that the kids in these schools don't need access to the best teachers possible. So for that reason, I am here to heartily support this board or this bill, and hope you'll hear out the rest of the testimony coming. So if any questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
Okay. Any questions of the panelists?
Question? No.
So. Representative Knott.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Question on the class. Would this make the charter schools able to apply for the class grants and be eligible for those funds, do you know?
Representative Hack, Chair Doherty, I don't know for sure. There's some people behind me that are really smart about this that I know will have that answer. I would hope so. They still are sponsored by a district. Typically, so you know, the district would have to be on board with that.
Work with that. So
yeah.
I agree with you completely that that's just been tremendous work across our state. So I think it'd be great to be able to share that with charter schools. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Any other questions? Okay, thank you very much. Representative Johnson, you may leave because we're going to be hearing about you have the outdoor school also.
Oh, yes.
For the audience, we're going to gavel out and then open up again for testimony on each of these bills.
The sixth grade outdoor school has lots of emotional ties to me as a former middle school principal. The teachers used to get the kids all ready, I always like to deal with the big kids. I mean, that's why I like it here. It's just like a big middle school or a high school.
Yes.
Well, it's like every once in a while I don't have to break up fights, but it's good. But so when one of my granddaughters went to outdoor school this year, and so as I was thinking about testimony for today, I called her and I want to just urge your support of House Bill 2648, and I did not do this for the record. I'm Betty Comp, House Representative, House District 22. According to my she's just prissy. She doesn't like dirt. She doesn't like to go outside a whole.
She accessorizes well.
She accessorizes very well. I mean, at sixth grade, and she's already put it on makeup. I don't know where I went wrong with her mother. According to my daughter, granddaughter, Cassie loved outdoor school. She got to dissect a squid. On her night walk, they were able to see plankton on the beach. On the nature walk, they learned about edible leaves. They also made a cup out of a leaf and making an ointment like Neosporin for healing their wounds using nature. outdoor school provided a wonderful opportunity for her and to be. And one of the best parts is she met new friends in that outdoor school setting that she would have never met otherwise. And the rewards of outdoor school, I'm sure you're going to hear lots of testimony from students and other people here. But it is something I definitely support that we need back in our schools and to all schools, not just a handful of schools here or there. And I wish I could stay and listen to all the testimony, but I get to go to general government. And but yeah, any questions from the committee?
Okay, you did a great job. Thank you, Representative.
Thank you, and thank you for your time and your consideration.
Thank you.
And so don't tell my granddaughter what I said.
No, oh no, oh no, oh no, it will embarrass her.
Sealed.
Oh, right, yes.
Okay, so I close the concurrent hearings on House Bill 2186 and 2648, and I open up a public hearing on 2186. And again, that is the bill that that core teaching standards be applied to public charters. Okay. Okay, we have three people speaking on this. We have Frank Caropello, Stephanie Holt, and Melissa Strawn. Thank you. And just make sure you identify yourself for the record.
Good afternoon, Chair Doherty, members of the committee. Thank you for your time, and you pronounced my name right. Thank you. Appreciate that. My name is Frank Caropello. I am the Vice President of Education Policy with the Chalkboard Project. Before joining Chalkboard, I had the honor of serving as a teacher, a school principal, and assistant superintendent in the North Santiam and Greater Albany school districts. I'm here today to testify in support of House Bill 2186, and with me I have two teachers from Greater Albany that I had the honor of supervising as their principal for 7 years in the Albany School District. Before I turn it over to them, I plan on giving you a brief background on the bill, but Representatives Combs and Johnson described the bill so adequately I don't believe I need to do that again. We are here because the original legislation did not explicitly mention charter schools, and there has been some confusion in varied implementation of Senate Bill 290 and the Oregon framework as it relates to charter schools. And while some have been implementing new evaluation systems, most have not been. It is largely depends on the language and the policies of the charter with the sponsoring district. This bill will ensure that all public school teachers, whether in traditional public schools or in charter schools, are evaluated by the same standards and with the same guidelines. With me today, as I said, are Melissa Strawn and Stephanie Holt. Both are teachers in the Greater Albany School District, and I had the honor of working alongside them as their principal for 7 years, and believe that they can share some of their experiences with evaluation and the work that we did in Albany through the CLASS project, as well as Senate Bill 290. So I will turn it over to them, and then we'll be happy to take questions.
Okay, thank you.
All right, my name is Melissa Strawn, and this is my 15th year as an educator in Albany. I work half-time as a third-grade math and science teacher, and the other half of my day is spent working as a math coach. And when thinking about the evaluation process and comparing it to the evaluation process that we used to have, the biggest difference for me is in the quality and the quantity of the feedback that I'm now getting with our new evaluation process. The feedback, the specific and the frequent feedback, has helped improve my practice and thus increases student learning. So as an example, our previous teacher evaluation form included a category that said teaches to an objective, and that was all the information that was given. There were no specific details on what it meant to teach to that objective. Our new evaluation form is a rubric, which gives me a lot of information on what it means to teach that objective or to work it on each explicit area. And so there are entire fields that are explicitly described with different scores for each standard. And it's the level of detail that's provided in this rubric that makes it such an effective evaluation tool for me. It gives me real feedback, letting me know exactly where I stand. It doesn't just say I'm meeting or I'm not meeting. It tells me actions that I need to take to improve my practice. So as an example of that, the previous evaluation with the category of teaching to an objective, that was all the information I had. And when I did a self-evaluation with that rubric, with the new rubric, I looked through this and I read each of the descriptors and I identified the section of the rubric that best described how I was communicating goals with my students. And it said, refers in passing the purpose of the instruction, tell students the lesson objectives. Lesson objectives may be posted, but not referred to, elaborated on, or explained. And when I saw that statement, it really hit the nail on the head for how I was sharing objectives with my students, and it was an area that was obvious that I needed to strengthen. And because of that rubric, I realized that. Before that rubric, I hadn't really considered what that meant. This realization was a pivotal moment in my teaching career. The rubric did more than point out that I had an area that needed improvement, but it also showed me exactly how I needed to improve and provided a framework for that improvement. So 4 years later, I'm using this improved understanding of communicating goals and objectives with my students in my own classroom. We now introduce the objective. We read it together as a class. We define language that may be confusing to students or clarify any meanings that may hang them up throughout the lesson. We refer to the objective throughout the lesson, and at the end, we go back and check in and see how we're doing towards meeting our objective. Also, as a coach, I have had the opportunity of working with other teachers around these specific detailed rubrics as well. And after coaching a third grade teacher in our building, she shared the following comment on an online math forum. She said, I have recently been converted to the practice of not only telling the students the objective, but also defining all of the language in it. I found that when I do this, that I remember to refer to the objective more often, as do my students. I also think this solves the problem of who is the objective for, when we take the time to define all of the language in it. I feel more confident that my students actually could describe what their goal for the lesson is. Hooray. What are other people doing? How are you making your objective more than administrative wall decor? And so I believe that this rubric with the specific information has helped improve my practice, helped improve my student learning, and is also giving our whole school a common language to work with. The power of this rubric is how it describes teacher effectiveness as a spectrum rather than just a checklist. Other benefits of the format include the shared language between teachers and administrators. So principals have always observed me, but now the feedback that I have is more meaningful because it's aligned to our core teaching standards. And so on some of those core teaching standards focus on effective questioning and student engagement. And so now that we have clearly defined what this means, the administrator and I have shared language to discuss if I am effective or how I could be more effective. So Albany's new evaluation process has been truly a transformative tool in improving my instruction, and it continues to be a transformative tool in increasing student learning in my classroom. Thank you.
Thank you. My name is Stephanie Holt. This is my 15th year teaching. This year I teach half-time fourth grade math, science, and health, and I am half-time an envoy communication behavior support for the district in Albany. In the 15 years I've been teaching, I've had 5 administrators, and out of those 5, 2 have had the new teaching rubric that Albany has used. And out of those administrators that I've had, not that the first 3 were not great, the 2 that have used the rubric have had specific feedback to be able to give me. Instead of just coming in and watching what I'm doing, writing down their notes, we have a meeting and that's that, and I hear, oh, you pass, or that's great, which doesn't really help me. I mean, it feeds my ego. Great. Thank you very much. But I needed something more, and the rubric with the specific language very much gave administrators that tool I think they were looking for, and able to be to go from just being someone who runs the building to someone who's coaching their teachers. How that translated to my classroom is I was very specific with my students. After I started getting specific feedback from my administrator, I became very explicit with my students, so they knew why we were doing what we were doing. And instead of just posting lesson objectives and not really referring to them, just having them up there in case the administrator happened to walk in, the students and I would create them together, or I would write them up and they would say, well, I don't understand what that means. And we'd have to have a discussion about what it is, why we're doing what we're doing, and how we're going to get there. That didn't happen my first half of my career at all. I just kept going day by day and year by year, and thought I was doing pretty good until this rubric came into play and I realized, wow, I have a lot of work to do. Mm-hmm. And I never felt like it was a tool that administrators used as a looking for something to catch me on. It was never framed that way to me. It was always, you know, I noticed you did this really well. What if we try to move from maybe being in a 3 category to a 4? What would that look like? And how can you change what you do in your classroom? Very specific feedback like that that made my career, you know, like Melissa said, I had a big turning point at that moment with, oh, wow, I can do this and so much more. That has in turn taken my kids, I believe, to the next level. My students, they understand what we're doing. When we get to a task that's hard for them, they struggle through it. Like, and I constantly go back saying, well, when I was learning all this stuff too, I had to figure out what the growth goals were for you guys and what this means and why. So it's a learning environment that we do together now, instead of me just imparting all of my wisdom to them or in hoping that they take it all in. That it's more of a collaborative classroom with working together and using that specific language out of the rubric that we've had.
From the chair, Representative Hack, your question earlier about class grants, which is now known as the School District Collaboration.
How'd you know that was coming?
Absolutely. This bill does not impact the ability for charters to participate with their local districts in a class project or the School District Collaboration Fund, as is now known. Those grants go to local districts. The local district can then choose, consulting with the charter, whether to include them in that work or not. So they are sort of fall under the umbrella of whatever sponsoring district they have. What this bill does is simply add the core teaching statutes to the list of laws that apply to charters.
Can I ask a follow-up?
Thank you. Please.
So the rubrics that you're talking about, mm-hmm. Can you clarify, were those designed and created through the class grant and the collaboration grant?
In a very parallel process. So, for example, in North Sandy, I'm participating in a School District Collaboration Fund grant. They went through that collaborative design process. Senate Bill 290 requires all districts to do that, whether they're participating in class or not. So the way the statutes in the Oregon framework are written, districts are pulled together a team that incorporates teachers in the district, administrators in the district. They locally design their rubrics, like we did in Albany, like North Sandy M did, around their local design. And then as long as it aligns with the state standards and framework, and then the state approves it. So it incorporates that local design process.
Follow-up,
please.
But those teams that are put together and the time that's put into that by teachers is funded through those grant funds. So if charter schools are going to be pulled into that, that's at the discretion of a district to pull those folks in, which would be more dollars, additional teachers brought in. But
correct.
This bill does not address that, correct? In that they can't apply separately. It has to be at the discretion of the district.
So there's sort of two parallel paths leading to the same spot. One is through the School District Collaboration Fund, where they were provided dollars under that umbrella. Districts also received funds out of the Network for Quality Teaching and Learning that all districts received to do this work, whether they were part of the collaboration grant or not. So they both received funds. What this bill would do is add those core teaching statutes, and what the ODE would have to do would be to figure out how to provide the charter schools the resources needed to do that. So it could be through the the funds that were allocated for the professional learning team conferences and those, or it could be asking the districts to collaborate and provide the training to them. But yes, it is a good point that there would be need to be a need for funds to the charter schools to then do some of this work.
One last. So would there be a fiscal impact then? Because are we going to designate additional dollars to take care of the charter schools? I just know that those dollars are really fragmented as it is. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I love the concept and I believe in it and I see the great work it does, but if there's going to be additional folks involved, how are we economically going to make sure that that can actually occur?
Absolutely. I think the funds are available through the Network for Quality Teaching and Learning, and as a Chalkboard project, we've advocated for increasing that funds in order to be able to provide those funds, but this bill does not define that.
Well, if I can have one clarifying, but nothing in this bill prohibits the districts from not working with the charters and on evaluation and
that's
and dealing with this and then working with them. So nothing prohibits
yes.
them.
Okay. So it would be up to the district and the charter, their relationship, to decide how best to do that.
Correct. Okay.
But there's no dollars. No more specific dollars that would be given in order for them to do that.
Through this bill, no. But through the Network for Quality Teaching and Learning, we are advocating for the dollars to provide that there.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Representative Wilson, then Representative Springer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. To give a picture of the context of my question, I need to explain that I was in the legislature before, back in the old days when we approved charter schools back in 1999, I believe it was. And so I really haven't followed this since then. So I guess a question that I would have, knowing what I know from 99 and remembering the bruising debate that took place right down to the issues of, you know, who could teach in a charter school and who can't, what their qualifications must be and so forth. What problem with charter schools is this bill intended to address or to fix?
I wouldn't say there's a problem this is intending to fix. Basically, what this bill would do would be that say that charter school teachers would be evaluated using the same framework and standards that traditional public school teachers would be evaluated using.
Okay, follow up. So let me ask you this. Whose idea was it that this should happen? I mean, I see the bill sponsors here, but could you give me a feeling for the etymology here of how this came to be?
I don't know.
Okay.
I'm sorry.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Springer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And my question just got a little shorter because Representative Hack was touching on some of the points that concern me. One point of clarification that I do want to put out there is if a district is part of a class project, and as you said, they can negotiate that as part of the charter with a charter school district. However, I know of one district in the state, I know of one, and there could be more, that their association decided to no longer participate. So the decision-making was really in the hands of the school board and the charter school if there had been a relationship there. I just want us to be clear that although there's opportunity for those two entities to come together, it does not mean they will, and that the charter school is given an equal access to those particular funds that a school district has.
Representative Springer, that would be correct. Many things are negotiated in the charter agreement between the charter and the district. This bill is silent on if that would have to be in the charter or if it would be decided elsewhere. So you're correct.
Okay, Representative Hack.
Madam Chair.
Yes.
Thank you. In addition, on the class and the chalkboard, there are times that school districts are no longer involved in that and are asked to not participate. So if those dollars are available, sometimes those are then taken away. So I do want to make that also on the record that sometimes that's not an option for a district. And then are we, Madam Chair, going to have any testimony from charter schools? Because that's one group we're not hearing from. I mean, they're not here. And
no one signed up.
I'm curious as to what, if they were here, what we would hear from them.
So, Representative, one of the things that we thought about was the reason we asked Melissa and Stephanie to join us was they've experienced that transformation of a district going through not having evaluations done in, in an enhanced way that enhanced professional learning and growth, to switching to one that did. So we thought that it would be better to more inform your decision by having had teachers who went through this process and saw the benefit of it. So that's why we asked them to attend. To your first question about the class grant, once again, I think I want to try to clarify that is an additional grant opportunity that districts can get. Even every district under Senate Bill 290, all 197 districts in the state were required to go through an evaluation redesign process that was collaborative in nature, and they were given funds from the Network of Quality Teaching and Learning, not the same degree of funds that they would the school district collaboration fund districts received. And you're also correct that districts, if they were, did not score high enough in a rubric to then qualify for funding for an additional year under the collaboration grant, they, as determined by the department, they were not funded again. That's correct.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
Okay. Any other questions? I just kind of, I have kind of a question. To me, the purpose of the bill, because Representative Johnson had said that of the 40 schools that were in the bottom, 24 of them were charter schools. And so I get the idea that this bill is to work with that so they're no longer there, so you have, it sounds like the teaching rubric that at least you guys came up with, or your school district. And so is the whole purpose of this to give the same opportunity, or not the same opportunity, to have the same standards for the charter school kids that we have so they will get the best
charter,
quality
yes,
teaching?
Yes, that's correct. Yes.
Okay, thank you. Okay, any other questions? Okay, that's all we had signed up. Is there anybody else that would like to speak on House Bill 2186? Okay, with that, we close the public hearing on House Bill 2186 and open a public hearing on House Bill 2648.
Are you going to do anything with this bill?
No. Do you want to do that now? Or?
Yeah.
Okay, before we get going with this, can I legally have Representative Springer have a point of clarification on the last bill, or do I have to open it up again?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, you can.
So yes, just, I thought maybe we were moving on to a work session. I hesitated too long. A couple points that I'd like to bring out is I've had a couple, three folks either mentioned to me either via email or something else that this is about Common Core, because it talks about core standards. This isn't a Common Core bill.
Right.
Supporting this bill is not endorsing Common Core whatsoever. The other point I want to bring out, and something else that I saw in the bills, it talks also about some personal electronic pieces in there. And I've gone through that statute because it adds that to the requirements, which I think is just a delay of what we did two sessions ago in the 13th session. So we haven't talked much about that, but I wanted to put on the record that we're also addressing that.
Yeah, that's on the record. Okay. Did I open the outdoor school one? Okay, we're ready. Okay, so the ones that I have down here, I don't know if it's Rex Bertholder, Ben Browser, and John Motor.
Yoder.
I'm sorry, the Canby people would be very upset with me, wouldn't they? Okay, so please, go ahead.
Great. Thank you very much, Chair Doherty and members of the committee. My name is Rex Burkholder, and I'm representing the Oregon Outdoor Education Coalition. Nice afternoon today. This is a new organization that's been formed to promote the benefits of using Oregon's tremendous natural setting to inspire, motivate, and engage Oregonians of all ages. Today, specifically, we're here to ask you to support House Bill 2648, which would establish sufficient and sustainable funding for what is truly an Oregon tradition, outdoor school. If you're one of the million-plus Oregonians who went to outdoor school, you'll know firsthand the magic of learning about nature and our natural resources, learning about forests while walking through them, learning about geology by getting muddy, and learning about salmon and rivers by wading in the waters. The first outdoor school in Oregon, and this is something I learned through this process, was founded in Curry County in 1958, maybe 57, I may not have that right, by retired foresters and wildlife biologists who thought that the young people in their community were losing touch with their natural heritage. By the late 1960s, well over 80% of Oregon school children got to spend a week learning about science in Oregon, at the coast, in the woods, or in the desert. Outdoor school is a transformative experience. You'll hear about this today. You'll also hear from education experts who can tell you better than I can how outdoor school advances all our educational goals and helps develop leadership, collaborative skills, and interest in learning, as well as bringing kids together from all walks of life and all parts of the state. That's the good news. It's a great program. The bad news is that after 20 years of tight education budgets, outdoor school has been basically decimated. Currently, only about half of Oregon school children have outdoor school offered by their districts. And most districts that still offer it can only afford a much shorter and much less impactful program. Most districts actually pay for outdoor school through fees and through fundraising. And this loss is felt particularly hard in our rural and less wealthy communities. Oregonians know how effective outdoor school is, and I have some numbers I'll show in a second here, and they overwhelmingly support it. In survey after survey, voters throughout the state, from all walks of life, from all parties, from all parts of the economy, they tell us that outdoor school is a worthy program, worthy enough for them to actually say that they're willing to raise their taxes to provide it. Thank you for holding this hearing today. We urge your support of House Bill 2648 and look forward to working with the committee to see that all Oregon kids today and into the future have this opportunity to understand and appreciate Oregon's incredible natural bounty. I have just a couple slides here, if this works. So outdoor school, some of that detail. There must be a better way to do this. So I mentioned that Oregonians support outdoor school. There's been a number of recent surveys. This one is from early 2014 about support for outdoor education in general. You see the numbers there. Then we asked this poll, actually Adam Davis with DHM Research asked the poll, would you support spending $20 million a year to ensure all Oregon students get a chance to attend outdoor school? 64% yes. And then this fall, no, this is again from the spring, showing that it's throughout the state. And here's something that is surprising, is that it's actually stronger support in the rural parts of the state for this program. And here's the things that people told us that why they thought was so important. It's about self-sufficiency, leadership, being good stewards, collaboration, and also help our kids be active and healthier. So we're going to now go on to Ben, who is here with recent experience of the program, and tell you about his experience there.
Okay. Thank you. Welcome.
Madam Chair.
Yeah, it can be like this far away. Okay. So you can, there we go. Thank you.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, my name is Ben Bowser. I'm a fifth grader at Bonnie Slope Elementary in the Beaverton School District. Last fall, I went to outdoor school at Camp Westwind, and I loved it. We did three types of field studies. We looked at tide pools on the beach, we took a night hike and learned how to make a spark by biting into a mint. In the estuary field study, we walked in the mud and learned to go ghost shrimping. We sang songs around the campfire and played games together. I'm a good student, but I've never really liked school much. I think it's boring, but outdoor school wasn't boring at all. My parents say it's the first time they've ever really seen me excited about school. I sang all the songs for them, showed them what all the beads on my name tag mean, and even took them for a hike in the woods to show them all the plants I learned to identify. I was one of the Oregon students lucky enough to go to outdoor school. The district paid part of the cost, my parents paid part of it, and we fifth graders held a pancake breakfast to raise the money to pay for the rest. Not all Oregon students are that lucky. Many families can't afford to pay part of the costs. Some school districts can't pay for part. Bonnie Slope has an active and organized community that supports their students, and not all schools have that. I think all Oregon students should have a chance to go to outdoor school. Just think how many other kids there are in Oregon who are like me. They are smart, but they don't like school. Many could even think school is so pointless that they will drop out someday. What if all they need is a spark of inspiration? Outdoor school could inspire a whole generation of scientists, environmentalists, artists, writers, teachers, and leaders. Outdoor school is great for Oregon's future. And you should make every Oregon student, and you should make sure every Oregon student has a chance to go. I would be glad to answer any questions you have.
Okay, Ben, thank you very much. We will after Mr. Yoder speaks.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. It's always a tough act to follow. I ask that this not happen, but I'm the one that gets to go after the student. I'll do my best to move the conversation forward.
Thank you.
My name is John Yoder, and I've been in education for over 35 years as a teacher, as a science specialist for the Salem-Keizer School District, and currently as a STEM specialist for the South Metro Salem STEM Partnership and also for Salem-Keizer School District. I wanted to provide a bit of background and connectivity to previous work. In 2009, House Bill 2544, No Oregon Child Left Inside, was passed. It was established to set some Oregon environmental literacy plan. I was a member appointed to that 11-member task force, and it was really generated by the book Last Child in the Woods by Richard Louv. I don't know if you've had a chance to read that, but if you haven't, you certainly should. And he references students that we've lost a generation through a nature deficit disorder, as he termed it. Through the next year of 2009, the task force developed standards and strands to develop this environmental literacy plan, and as I said, it was adopted in October 1 of 2010. Outdoor School directly addresses these strands and moves this program forward, and it does so in an actively and an engaging way rather than sitting in the classroom and reading about it, but they get a firsthand experience with this. Current work by the OELP, or the Oregon Environmental Literacy Plan, is around connecting it to the new science standards, the next generation science standards, as well as providing some professional development around the state. So I've been involved in a little bit of that. Again, trying to get kids out of the four walls and become more active participants in their learning. So the Outdoor School bill that we're talking about is fully one way of reaching those goals of that No Oregon Child Left Inside Act. As far as my current work with STEM, there is a major movement both in the state and nationally around e-STEM, environmental STEM, and seeing that as far as careers as a major market for our students as they graduate to move into those kinds of fields and careers. And so STEM is definitely a supporter of and connected to the Outdoor School efforts. I know with the South Metro STEM Partnership, one of our expectations around STEM instruction is authentic learning experiences, partnerships with the community, and this fulfills all of those. I think I would be remiss if I didn't speak to this as my classroom teaching experience years. It seems that our current status in education is really focusing on math, reading, writing, and it's related to either high-stakes testing or standards or whatever you will. And so often any additional pieces are viewed as distractions or additions or separations from. And I think that's a mistake. And I think what is too often the case, particularly in our elementary schools, is that reading, writing, and math now take the place of most everything else that we're doing. And it's in passive learning experiences in the classroom. And it's not either or. It's not let's do outdoor school or let's do reading, writing, and math. But actually, outdoor school and those other engaging, motivating experiences are ways that research and literature has shown that students will become better readers, will become better writers, will become better mathematicians. Those are tools. Reading, writing, math are tools by which students can apply those in contextual ways and do better. So instead of speaking louder and slower and hoping students have those experiences, I think it's important that we try to engage them in spaces and places like outdoor school where they can become more engaged, more motivated, active learners, and become better readers and writers. So it's actually an important part of the school instructional time. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. Do we have any questions of the panelists? It's good to see you. Senator Frederick.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. I'm curious whether you, when you were in an outdoor school, were there others, were there kids from other schools there with you, or was it just your school?
It was just the fifth grade at my school.
I see. All right. Thank you. Thank you.
Any other? Representative Peluso.
Well, just a comment. A huge supporter of outdoor school, and one piece I want to add to the discussion. So my daughter went in sixth grade. She was not terribly in awe of it, but she was motivated enough that for every year of high school, she returned as a counselor leader. And so I just wanted to throw that opportunity out that is a another good supportive piece of what happens when somebody experiences outdoor school. What I found with my daughter, again, wasn't so happy in the rain and the mud and those sorts of things, but as she grew and matured, it has had a huge, huge impact on her. And she'll tell you that's why she wants to be a teacher. So I think it's all just another just great aspect of the program that sometimes goes not intentionally but unnoticed.
Thank you very much. Representative.
Well, no, no. We'll go ahead and let Lou go.
Pardon?
Yep. Lou McHugh.
No, I just wanted to. Thank you very much, Madam Chair. Let me echo that. My son is a teacher. Now, he's in a family of preachers or teachers, so that's not particularly a big surprise. But as a result of that, I mean, the outdoor school experience, both as a sixth grader and then as a counselor, really has it's clearly made a huge impact. But I want to ask that you also continue to remind us that I think outdoor school manages to link the metro area and urban areas and rural areas so much more than we used to think. We no longer have family in those rural areas, often folks in the Portland area. So if they have a sense of what goes on in outdoor school, they also gain a respect for the people who are doing the work out in the rural areas, and I think that's an important factor that's not officially tied to learning about streams or birds or soil. I better say soil rather than dirt, but I think it's important that's there. So to say I'm a big supporter of outdoor school, Rex knows this, so this is the kind of thing that I really want to make sure that we are close to and try to do as much as we possibly can.
Yes, Madam Chair, Representative Frederick and Representative Peluso, we do have Dan Prince here, who is the director of the Multnomah Education Service District Outdoor School, and he can address better than I can the use of high school students as counselors, as well as the fact that most of these camps actually are very intentionally mixing students from throughout the state, but also throughout different demographics within the area as well.
Thank you. Representative Reardon, did you have a question?
Statement,
yes.
SCAT.
SCAT? Oh, SCAT. I know what that is. I didn't go to outdoor school. I know what that is.
Where are we going with this?
That's what I remember, my oldest daughter telling me about outdoor school, and all she had learned about being able to identify, you know, what the animal had eaten, you know, all on and on, and she could probably still tell you that. So that was my first introduction. My oldest stepdaughter was, like Representative Peluso's, was a counselor for two sessions at David Douglas, and huge impact on her life. So I'm an avid supporter of outdoor school. I love that it's tying in with their STEM efforts. And but for the record, I want to figure out a way to make this work. But for the record, I got to say I'm questioning how does it stack up against, you know, the early childhood efforts, you know, CTE and STEM, trying to get more money for some of these strategic investments across the board. So fortunately, this is the policy group, and we can just say that, hey, we can pile on and say this is wonderful, and it truly is. But I am concerned about how it ranks, and but also recognizing that it's been really difficult for people to raise money. And back at David Douglas, probably mid-90s, you know, we raised like a whole $8,000, you know, and that was and that sat in a fund for years because we couldn't raise any more money to try to support outdoor schools. So the community was behind it. Everybody wanted it to be successful, but we've just had an awful time trying to fund it. And we didn't do it last session when we tried to get money from the watershed funds. Hopefully, we can find a way just to purely step up to the plate and say, yeah, this is important. This fits into our overall program. So I'm a total advocate for the program, want to make it successful. It's going to be a challenge.
Okay, thank you. Representative Hackett and Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I completely was headed down the same direction that Representative Reardon was. I'm concerned about the same thing. I'm a huge advocate. I still have my macrame necklace in my little treasure box with my beads. But I'm really, really concerned about the same thing. Do we know how the funding will be based? Is it going to be based on ADM? Is it based on a – is there going to be a list of approved outdoor schools that are based on an average cost? Is there going to be certain ones that the OSU Extension is going to say these are approved? I think it's important that we address that for the committee, that
because we may have some people coming up and talking about that. I think Mr. Campbell is going to talk about the money aspect.
Yeah, so. Madam Chair and Representative Hack, we do have both a representative from the OSU Extension Service as well as Craig Campbell here, who's representing this effort to address the details of this.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Thank you.
Representative Wilson and Representative Barreto.
Yeah, thanks, Madam Chair. I just texted a certain lobbyist in this building a moment ago, and I said, son, did you enjoy indoor school or outdoor school in middle school? And he said, yes, sixth grade, good experience.
That's great. Yeah.
I'll be interested to know, though, about the funding stream and exactly how this is going to work.
I better not text my L.A. He's a city kid. Okay, Representative Barreto.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Is this something that is, one, I do think it's great that they had a pancake feed to help raise money and got the kids involved in being a part of that and leveraging that. Is this something that is available for them every year? Is it something that they just do every other year, fourth grade, fifth grade, sixth grade?
Well, it's only for fifth graders, but, like, fifth graders will work. We'll have certain assigned jobs, like chefs and waiters and waitresses, and just helps raise money for outdoor school.
So it's one time fifth grade?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay, any other questions? Representative McLean.
We're making statements more than asking questions, and I think that tells you that the panel up here really do believe in the goal. And I just remember my own experience and the experience of my four children, and they were positive. And they connected to things like self-reliance, and they connected to things like, you say, science and STEM-type activities. And so I think and I just want to thank the panel, because I think that all of you have been involved in trying to keep this goal and this really good educational experience alive until we can all figure out how to put more money toward all experiences for all students in our state. But I do want to thank you for that. And the last item I remember the most out of, for me, it wasn't the muddy water or the walk in the creek or anything like that. It was looking at the different leaves and the plants. That was the class that I liked the best, was identification of plants. And I want you to know that later on in school, I got an A in my biology plant, you know, collection. I had to have over 100 different, you know, different plant leaves. And it connects. It's an extension of the classroom. And I think that's what's exciting, because it's, as you say, it's definitely active, and it brings creative aspects and math aspects and all kinds of different learning happening together.
Oh, yeah.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Any other comments or questions for this panel? Okay, thank you. Thank you very much. And you did a very good job. And I noticed the slide. That's Camp Namanu, by the way.
Oh,
I knew that.
Sure to shine all of the time.
You betcha. There's the weavery right down there. Yeah. Okay, thank you. We have Nancy Bales and Craig Campbell. Thank you. You did a great job, Ben. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair, representatives of the committee. I'm Nancy Bales. I am the executive director at the Gray Family Foundation, and I also a member of the steering committee for the Outdoor Education Coalition. The Gray Family Foundation was established in 2012, and we're a supporting organization of the Oregon Community Foundation, and we grew out of the Gray Family Fund, which was set up in 2007 there. It's through our grant making at Gray Family Foundation. We really seek to encourage and support the residents of Oregon in fostering a strong local land ethic, sustainable communities, and thoughtful stewardship of our natural environment. And we do this by supporting programs such as outdoor school education, geography education, and professional development of our teachers. The Gray Family Foundation seeks to give Oregon students a greater understanding of the world outside the classroom, because we know that it's not just about studying about the outdoors, but in the outdoors, that has the profound and lasting effect on our kids' learning as a whole. So since 2007, we have cumulatively granted over $103 million to support this vision. But each year, we receive more than double the requests that we're able to fund for outdoor school programs from educators. And these are for best practice programs. And this, we know, only accounts for a very, very small portion of the need out there across the state. We have done studies. We have ample anecdotal evidence that cite the lack of funding as the greatest barrier to participation in outdoor school education. And so through our years of supporting this work, we've heard from schools, from outdoor school providers, residential camps, foundation, school foundation partners, superintendents, et cetera, passionate teachers and educators. And the stories are the same across the state, that programs that only exist because there's a passionate teacher in a school that's driving that program every year and scraping together those community resources. Or there's continual budget pressures that cause really great programs to be downsized or cut altogether, and losses. And we even hear about camps that have to close their doors to outdoor school programs because they can't get enough revenue from those programs, that those programs can't pay enough to account for the wear and tear on those camps. And what that's created is this patchwork of inequitable accessibility to outdoor school programs. We know from our research that less than half the kids in our state are now have access to outdoor school, and even fewer access to what's considered the best practice full week experience of an outdoor school education that many of you probably got to participate in. So we at the Gray Family Foundation see the need to keep people connected to and knowledgeable about what keeps our communities healthy. And this begins by supporting programs that help our children grow into community stewards. And this happens by getting them outside and providing them an understanding of the natural resources and the natural systems that sustain us. Outdoor school supports our youth in developing the skills, the knowledge, and the resources necessary to understand the consequences of their actions or inactions, and then to get them educated, engaged, and empowered to make these decisions. Gray Family Foundation is based on the values and the belief and life work of John and Betty Gray, and whose wide-ranging philanthropy and their social contributions really help make Oregon the exceptional place it is today. And so I'm here today, this afternoon, to ask you to join in that vision by supporting Outdoor School for All. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Craig Campbell. I'm also here on behalf of the Oregon Outdoor Education Coalition in support of House Bill 2648. It's my job to tell you a little bit about how this is intended to work. What you have in front of you is a bill that is not yet in its complete format. We have amendments that are being drafted as we speak. However, there's still a little bit more work to do to make sure that we've got everything right, and I want to take this opportunity to thank Representative Springer, who's going to be sitting down with us early next week, to make sure we get it right. Because what we're talking about doing is taking $22 million in state funding and making sure that every student in Oregon has a chance to enjoy the outdoor school experience in either fifth or sixth grade at the full level of 6 days, 5 nights. And as Rex had mentioned earlier, that has dropped off quite a bit since the program initially started and grew to its peak. So a lot of what we're talking about doing here is making sure that we are getting the money out to as many people as possible and making it available. Then the question has to come in about whether or not you're doing that equitably. And part of that is there are a number of school districts that are already putting in money for this program. There are a lot of families that are working on fundraising to make sure that they have that money. So what we're trying to do is make sure everyone has the money available to them so that they can take advantage of a program. We don't want to penalize those who are already putting money into it. And so we want to make sure we get that dynamic right. I will say I was unfortunate. I happen to have grown up in a school district that did not have outdoor school. So unfortunately, Representative Reardon, I have no scatological knowledge whatsoever. So I don't know what I've stepped in when I've stepped in it. I have to live with that for the rest of my life.
It explains what
I'm hoping others in order will not have to do that. I did want to talk some of the specifics. A lot of what we're trying to do is talk about maintaining a balance, because Oregon has some needs that are associated with outdoor schools. Part of that is making sure the kids understand the science, the soil, water, plants, and animals involved in an outdoor experience, and making sure they have hands-on ability to apply that science so it gets ingrained so they can learn it. Another part, however, has to deal with Oregon's very unique history, where we have this balance between our desire to be good stewards of the environment, but also recognize we have critical needs about maintaining the natural resources economy that we have in the state and making sure that those are well appreciated. Having kids out there and experiencing those is going to be critical. And speaking on behalf of some industries that require those who are interested in going into outdoor careers, they're having a harder and harder time finding young people who want to grow up and enter into those careers, whether it be forestry or agriculture or logging or whatever it happens to be. It's just hard to get them to do that when they're used to living in a more urban setting where they never get a chance to get out there and experience what the outdoors are like. And obviously, we need to talk about the interrelationship between those two things so we have a good balance. The next slide, or the final slide that I wanted to talk about in brief, is making sure that we're integrating what we're doing with what the schools are doing, so that the schools don't look at this as being losing the kids when they need them to be taking care of their core curriculum or the key curriculum elements. We want to make sure that those are related to what they're doing in the outdoor schools and have a link to go back. And at the same time, one of the things we heard loud and clear from the public when we talked to them is they want kids to develop leadership skills, the ability to work together, to problem solve, and there's no better place to do that when you have them together for a period of time where they're applying real-life skills to real-life problems and helping them figure out how they're going to do that. Once they leave school, they're going to be dealing with that on a day-to-day basis. So giving them this week-long opportunity to test those skills, learn how to use them properly, is critical. And then the other thing is dealing with there are different inequities throughout the state. It may be economic, it might be cultural, it might be urban-rural divide. It's critical to bring kids together where they're able to experience what those differences are. One, so that they realize that there's more out there than just where they're coming from, but also so that they can find out that this is not where I have to stay. I have opportunities that allow me to move beyond what my current experience is. Now, what you have in front of you in House Bill 2648 is a general fund ask of $22 million per year. That amount is based upon the number of kids that that are currently of fifth to sixth grade year of age and how much money is going in to take care of those kids that are currently going through outdoor schools. So in answer to your question, Representative Hack, the idea is there will be some sort of an allocation formula around per kid, but it will depend upon each district ESD program that's coordinating those things to find out how much money they ask for, but it'll be based roughly upon the number of kids that will be attending. The other key thing is maintaining that sense of balance that we want at the state level, so that you as legislators know when you are putting this money out, you're getting what you're asking for, and at the same time preserving the ability for the local folks to generate outdoor schools that reflect their needs, their experiences, and what they want to convey about their communities and their environment. So that's critical when we set these things up, so there's a flexibility but still a level of oversight. And we have asked for the Oregon State University Extension Office to be the one that kind of convenes that process, that does the grant-making process, but also creating an advisory committee to make sure that when they're getting those applications, when they're sending out the information about what is expected of the programs, that balance that I was talking about is preserved. Now, there are going to be some other folks, I understand, who are going to be talking about details around outdoor schools. But I do want to let you know that we do have amendments in the process, and I would like to ask one other thing. I indicated that this bill has a general fund ask for it, and as you probably have heard, probably ad nauseum, that we may be facing some budget challenges that might make $22 million per year as an ask a difficult lift. So we're interested in looking at a variety of different opportunities to do it. Our goal is to make sure that the funding is there. How we go about doing it may be a discussion that might take more time. And so we ask that you would be willing to help us in identifying how we can get across that goal line ultimately. But as we have those ideas, we'll be bringing them to you along with the amendments that flesh out what I was just talking about. And of course, with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions you may have.
Okay, thank you. Mr., are you just the AV guy here? Okay, thank you. Questions, Representative Peluso.
Just clarifying, outdoor school for all, so public, private, charter, homeschool.
Madam Chair, Representative Peluso, yes, everybody.
Thank you. Other questions? I have two, and one might be for the other people that are coming on. I know in the metro area and the coast, the valley area, there are places the kids can go, summer camps, that kind of thing. Is that a challenge in the rural areas for outdoor school?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, there may be people who are better able to address that.
I will ask that of the people coming up.
Madam Chair, I can address some of that. One of our programs actually at Gray Family Foundation specifically looks at helping. It's a endowment that's set up specifically to help maintain camps, mm-hmm. Camp maintenance. And I think, so to answer your question, yes, there are places in the state where those facilities are not.
They travel quite a bit.
Yeah, they a lot of them are traveling to different places. There are some where they do not have places available, and a lot of those at this point are doing day programs if they have programs. So one of the things that we are definitely interested in making sure that the outdoor school programs that are being supported reflect the needs of that community. And then we have been at the Gray Family Foundation working with different people to think about how, like the state parks and different groups, to think about how we might utilize other facilities and grow those opportunities for people to have the residential experience.
Okay, thank you.
And Madam Chair, to add to that, one of the things that will be a challenge that we need to overcome is that as we roll up a program statewide, we're going to need to find additional locations where these outdoor schools can be provided, mm-hmm. and where they haven't been provided for a while. So there will be that transition period as we help local school districts and ESDs develop programs, get them up and running, and find places for them.
Right. And then one other, just a comment for Mr. Campbell. There was a book in the Capitol gift store on scat in Oregon. It was a children's book. Actually, I think it was poop in Oregon, animal poop. And so you may want to stop by there after this hearing and see if they still have the book so you can go through and study it.
Madam Chair, thank you very much for that. I do have the book, What Is Your Poo Telling You, which has also been very instructive for me, but I will become more knowledgeable so the next time I come before you, I'll be able to answer questions in depth about that subject.
About animal, yes. We've got that.
Yes, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Representative Springer.
Follow that.
Actually, I bought it for a raffle, a big basket for children, so I know it's there.
Why?
Because kids love that stuff.
There you go. Mm-hmm. Well, okay, switching gears. If I may make just a couple comments, Madam Chair, not related to the prior subject.
Yes.
As we've been working on this last few months, and this group has done a tremendous amount of work, because I think they understand that they're representing a pretty diverse state, mm-hmm. pretty diverse folks that are accessing these camps. And so one of the things that I think it's important to remember and share a brief experience, I did not go to camp. I was sick. However, my son, when he came on sixth grade, was all excited. And at our school, when you start kindergarten, K-8, you start talking about outdoor school. So it is a part of the culture that we have decided is important. And us parents would fundraise our butts off to pay for this. There weren't district dollars. There weren't other dollars. So it's something that we chose as a very important value to us. And so as we've talked about this, I've said, let's keep that in mind and not necessarily reward the districts that have done nothing at the expense of the districts that have and the parents that have worked hard. However, my son didn't go. He was also sick. He had pneumonia. So we have no outdoor experience in our family. However, I do know that the value it holds in our school, and if we want to talk about is this in line with our goals, STEM, science, pretty connected there. So anyway, as we go through this conversation, I think we'd be hard-pressed to find somebody who does not like and support the idea of outdoor schools. It's the how, mm-hmm. and not just the how we fund it, but how we distribute those funds, whether it be a matching piece or what. And I think that that's probably the critical part of this discussion, not so much is it a good thing, mm-hmm. because it is a good thing. I think it is. So anyway, those are my comments. I'm going to refrain from the SCAT conversation.
Thank you. Representative Beck.
Thank you. So my question would be to the Gray Family Foundation Fund. Do you often see the ability of districts to match funds? Is that a criteria of yours? Do you see districts coming in with the ability to bring dollars to the table, or do you see that across the board they're just struggling, period?
Madam Chair, Representative Hack, so the foundation is in the big scheme of things a relatively small foundation. The grants that we're able to give to support outdoor school education are normally around the range of $13,500 for one grant. So it is never enough for them to just come to us for their sole source of funding. So we do ask, and we like to see multiple sources come in, and often the schools are, by the time they're able to come to us for a bit of funding to help support that effort, they have raised other funds that are also supporting that.
Can I follow up? Mm-hmm. I think it'd be great. I understand the struggles with the funding extremely well, and there are very, very few avenues out there for districts to go after dollars. So your fund is very, very unique.
Yes.
I think it'd be good if you could maybe give us an average on what a school district spends a year to send a class to outdoor school.
Yes. We can provide that information.
I think it'd be, because I think it's, I think that some would be very surprised at what it actually costs to do that, because mm-hmm. it's expensive.
Mm-hmm. Well, you're,
but it's yeah. worth the dollars, but it's.
Yeah. You're feeding and housing kids, so. Yeah.
Thank
anyway,
you.
Any other questions of this panel? Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And now we have four left. I don't know if you guys all want to come up as one or two and two, and that's Scott Reed, Michelle Cordova, Katie Lowen, and Dan Prince. You can come up with two or four.
I guess it's four.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Chair Daugherty, members of the committee, I'm Scott Reed. I serve at Oregon State University as Vice Provost for Outreach and Engagement and Director of the OSU Extension Service. There's sound logic, we believe, to connecting the redevelopment of outdoor schools to the OSU Extension Service. Our 100-year history in our state with programs and educators in every state includes positive youth development through our popular 4-H program that enrolls about 100,000 or so Oregon youth. And represents what we believe is the largest non-formal youth development educational program in the state. Our work with kids is aimed at trajectories for positive growth and lifelong learning that includes expertise in the design of overnight and residential camps. And so that, for us, provides a nice foundation to build outdoor schools from. Priorities expressed in House Bill 2648 are consistent with what we think are critical learning goals. And as the bill describes, we also give extra effort to access by children who are underserved by limitations in things like financial resources, location, or culture. If implemented, the recreation of outdoor schools would enable OSU Extension to develop additional capacity to allow us to contribute in the ways that I think is imagined for OSU Extension, things like curriculum development, providing training for others that are involved, delivery of the program itself, quality monitoring, compliance and evaluation, among other parts of the program. At OSU, our mission and successes with youth are focused on evidence-based curricula. We believe that a community of practice might emerge over time if outdoor schools are brought back that would focus on the operation of outdoor learning laboratories. And I suspect it would involve our own Oregon State University students who are on a trajectory towards science-based careers and might be able to involve them in some meaningful and productive way. As I close, you may also know that the Extension Service, along with the Oregon Agricultural Experiment Station and the Forest Research Laboratory, comprise the statewide public services at Oregon State, known collectively as the Statewides. One of our key concerns in the current legislative session is to recover some of the gradual loss of funding that we've experienced over the last decade. The Board of Trustees at the university endorsed last year a $16 million increase, $5 million of which would be provided for the Extension Service. Such funds are critical to our ongoing capacity to meet the needs of Oregonians. So even as I address the benefits that would be provided by House Bill 2648, I'd be remiss not to mention this critical funding priority. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Katie Lowen. I'm a counselor at Da Vinci Arts Middle School in Portland Public Schools. I'm here today for two capacities. One, as I would say, a success story from outdoor school. I have been to 56 weeks of outdoor school in my life. I started as a sixth grader, high school student leader, special needs volunteer, worked for the Oregon Trail Program, and was on staff at one site. And while I was on staff, I had the privilege of working with so many high school students that were amazing, and one of them looked at me one day and said, "You're better than my high school counselor." And I said, "Huh, school counselor, what an idea." So I applied to graduate school, and while in graduate school, I was lucky enough to be a research intern for Dan Prince, working on looking at what the impact is of outdoor school on high school students, whether or not it meets essential skills requirements and graduation requirements. So there is a lot of work there that I think is really, really important. But for the last 5 years, I've had the privilege of being a middle school counselor. In my first year, I had 756 students on my caseload between two schools. And I don't know if you can imagine trying to build a relationship with that many students at once, but it is incredibly difficult just to remember their names. I was really fortunate to have two principals who allowed me to be gone from my building for a week to go to outdoor school. It was the last year that we had a full week of outdoor school. And so I'm going to share a story about a student that is really close to my heart. Before I get into his story, because I'll probably start crying, one of the things I do want to say is that I think outdoor school meets a lot of the things that counselors are trying to do in our state right now, which is that we are trying to meet the American School Counseling Association mindsets and behavior standards that are set forth to us. And this program, through character education and community building, meets all of those needs. So not only are we working on science education, but we're also working on personal education, social emotional education. And middle school is such an impactful part of students' growth in that area that not looking at that piece of it would be a huge mistake. Science education is so important, but ultimately we are creating members of our community and future citizens. Mm-hmm. And this program has a huge impact on that. So the story that I want to tell you is about a boy named Sadiq. Sadiq was a Katrina survivor and moved to Portland with his dad. His mom was still in New Orleans at the time. Sadiq wouldn't go overnight anywhere anymore. He was too scared to go places. He knew what it was like to not be safe, to not have food every day. And through that process, he became very angry. He had PTSD. There was a lot of things he was dealing with. The first way I met Sadiq is that he threw a chair in his classroom, and the teacher said, "Feels like maybe you need to calm down, maybe go to the counselor for a little bit." And we worked on building our relationship. And when in working with his family, we convinced him that outdoor school was going to be okay, that it was an okay place to go. And he came with us, and within the first hour of being at outdoor school, the entire staff knew who he was. He was running up trees and bouncing off of them. He was trying to maintain something of his normal self, which was very agitated. And he, you know, in a traditional school setting, he might have been sent home. He might have been suspended. And instead, the outdoor school staff gave him chance after chance after chance because they knew that was where he needed to be. And in his cabin, he built relationships with other kids, with his student leaders that were hugely impactful. And we built a relationship, he and I. So we spent days together, having six full days to spend together in a place where he needed someone to go to and someone to be safe. That was me instead of his family for a little bit. And it created this amazing bond between the two of us. So out of 756 students, I took 36 kids with me to outdoor school, and I remember every single one of them, which is, I now have 400 every year that I'm working with.
So take that in for a second. That's a lot of kids. Sadiq made it through the entire week of outdoor school, and it was incredible. And at the end of the week, he was in tears. He didn't want to leave. He really wanted to see his dad. He just wanted to bring his dad to outdoor school with him instead of going back home. And he is a student who never really found success at school, similar to the story that you heard earlier. And when he got back, we still had challenges. We still had to face a lot of things every single day. And that wasn't the last time he threw a chair and he punched walls. And however, the relationship that we were able to build was so impactful that after 3 years of time as an eighth grader, he left our school as one of our leaders in our community, as a student who really felt good about himself as a person, as a leader. And I feel very strongly that without the relationship we built at outdoor school, I don't know that we could have done that work. Sadiq now volunteers in the middle school, helping other kids who have anger management problems, helping convince other kids that it's okay to go to outdoor school for a week and that it is a safe place where you can get food every day, have a warm place to sleep, and that people there are going to take care of you. He came back to me during his ninth grade year and said, Katie, I really feel like it was such a huge deal for us to go to outdoor school. His picture was still on my wall from outdoor school. And he really, really shared with me the impact that it had on him. I have a letter hanging on my wall from him that he wrote to me that said the relationship we built was what got him through middle school. And so I would just say that as we think about outdoor school, it's not just about science education. It's truly about building relationships and creating students who can think critically, can build that community, and that will come back to their everyday life knowing that they can bring that back with them from outdoor school. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, thank you so much for the time to speak with you and 12 inches, it says.
And there's no ruler on there.
Okay, so. Yeah. And obviously, thanks for your service to our young people in the state. I really appreciate it. My name is Dan Prince. I am the coordinator of outdoor school programs at Multnomah Education Service District. I've been doing outdoor school for about 27 years now. I live in Corbett in the west end of the Columbia Gorge. My intention was to tell you about what outdoor school is, but there's so much knowledge on the committee already. I'll take a little higher view and kind of synthesize some of that together. It's also a tricky question to answer. What is outdoor school? Because it really does vary across the state and across the country. And I don't claim to speak for all of the outdoor school programs in the state. I haven't seen them all. I have intimate knowledge of what we do at Multnomah ESD, and I visited many outdoor schools across the state, and I can see there's a lot of variation, but there's also some themes and commonalities. Bear with me. The first thing that I would mention is that it's science instruction that's hands-on and uses the outdoors as a wonderful lab. And we've heard some great examples. Students use science inquiry skills, including observation, data collection, analysis, and synthesis. The thing that drives science is the thing that makes you go, it's that. The technical term for that is a discrepant event. And the outdoors provides discrepant events all the time because it's an unpredictable lab. It's not a lab where you can set up an experiment and control for variables. It's just you see something. You see a bird come out of the sky, drop into the water, grab something, and fly off. What was that? What just happened there? Let's have a conversation about it. Let's make a hypothesis. How would we know? How would we be able to find out more about that bird? And it engages students in a really powerful, exciting way. It also gives students an opportunity to develop an understanding of our local natural resources and our reliance upon them, as well as an understanding of how we can steward those resources for the future. And then outdoor school science and other topics are integrated and aligned with school district curriculum goals. We would never have schools releasing their students, bringing their students to us if that wasn't the case, but it's incumbent upon us to ensure that we continually align to their goals and their standards because we feel like there's such a strong synergy there. Most often, but not always, outdoor school is a residential experience. The students living and learning with their teachers, classmates, and other students, sometimes from their school, oftentimes from other schools, from other school districts, from other parts of the state. My own sons, the most powerful thing they talked about was the friends that they met that did not go to their school. And the thing that made my older son cry about leaving outdoor school was not leaving outdoor school, but leaving the new friends that he had lived with. And that was really powerful for him. Immersion in the outdoors fosters an appreciation for and a stronger connection to Oregon's natural resource heritage. You're living there. It becomes yours. Immersion in the outdoors develops in students a stronger sense of place and belonging. I believe you become a truer Oregonian, a stronger Oregonian, by living in Oregon's outdoors. And the outdoor school residential experience helps students develop teamwork, communication, problem-solving skills in a safe and supported setting, in a setting that Sadiq can be successful in, and a setting that all students can be successful in. Those are difficult things and important things to learn. Often, and I appreciate Representative Peluso bringing this up, it's so important. Many outdoor school programs, including ours, incorporate leadership opportunities for high school age volunteers. We call them student leaders. In many programs, these high school students are able to teach science and provide other kinds of leadership to younger students and their peers. It's something to see a 10th grader work with two students who are having a problem with each other through the conflict resolution process. And I've observed that, and it is amazing. High school students who participate have reported increased confidence, increased public speaking skills, increased confidence in speaking publicly, one of America's greatest fears. I've even read that it's a stronger fear than death. Increased problem-solving skills and increased conflict resolution skills. In fact, sophomores who went to outdoor school once, over half of them indicated that within a month they had used conflict resolution skills they'd learned at outdoor school with their peer group. There's a lot of really wonderful outcomes. The current state of the system is that there's not really a system, and hopefully that's come across in the testimony. We have a limited opportunity to coordinate and collaborate across programs and regions. We have limited resources to implement programming in an equitable manner. There are haves and have-nots in the system, and that hurts. Many students and schools have no access at all, or have had the level of their programming cut back. And the other part of it is that there are limited accountability structures in place to ensure that high-quality programming is happening across the state. And there are limited opportunities for professional development in this field so that people, so that educators can become better and collaborate with their peers across the state and learn from each other. And so I think there's a huge opportunity here for us to build a system that is that capitalizes on all the incredible experiences the students are having, but also that we can build out to be a truly robust system. And I'll just leave you with just a couple things that one thing that happened to me a couple weeks ago, just to illustrate the lack of the system. I had a teacher in Drain sent me a note and said, "I hear you know about outdoor school. I'm a fifth grade teacher, and I was just told that I'm in charge of coordinating outdoor school for this spring. Do you have any resources?" And I said, so we're emailing back and forth. "Yeah, what are you needing?" "Everything." Everything. Okay, so I bundled up multiple emails with lots of attachments and said, "Call me when you have a chance to look through this and we can talk about it." But I fear that more often than not that's occurring, where you have somebody who's been tasked with this and they're really passionate and committed, but the structure and the resources just aren't there to really pull it off in a great way. So anyway, that's what I have for you. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you. I only need 12 inches. Hello, Madam Chair and committee members. My name is Michelle Cordova, and I am the executive director of Straub Environmental Center, which is a nonprofit here in Salem. We were formed about 11 years ago to offer environmental education programs and hands-on learning for all community members in the Mid-Willamette Valley. So I'm kind of taking a little bit of a different approach to this. I'm not with any school districts, but we do also provide environmental education. We have firsthand experience working with districts and educators as well. So we see our role as a highly visible environmental education leader in Marion and Polk counties. We inform and influence the entire Mid-Willamette Valley. And our intention is to create real change in our community and to have a measurable impact on our environment. We work in partnerships with our communities, and our environmental education programs teach sustainable practices and motivate people to become active stewards of the environment. Currently, we offer three summer day camps for elementary and middle school, and we're currently in the process of developing programs for teenagers to access their environment through fun, active, and focused programming with the intention of creating environmental leaders for the future, individuals who are excited about being stewards of their environment. We also provide an after-school environmental education class for elementary school, as well as a family nature night at a local elementary school. And our family nature retreat, which we offer at Drift Creek Camp on the coast, is an outdoor school adventure for the entire family. So our current programs align with the outdoor school goal of creating opportunities for Oregon children to experience the world through hands-on outdoor activities and to understand the world by understanding the place that they're in. Our organization is in a position to work with community members, schools, and other educators to provide outdoor school for children in our community. And we're super excited about the possibilities that this bill would offer. And we, as a nonprofit in this area, are very prepared to support the process in any way we can. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there any questions of the panelist?
This is not so much a question as just to say the first and the last speaker especially, you know, offered opportunities for more networking for this type of a program. And as we know in education, we need all the networking we can get. And I was lucky enough to be, you know, a 4-H'er for 12 years and get to go to outdoor school. So I had a lot of advantages. But I really appreciate the four of you and the experience that you brought to really giving us a full picture of what outdoor school can be, especially with support and help and that integration of activities and also organizations. And I like the three statewides, and we need to make sure you're strong and able to assist with this.
Thank you.
Any other question? Representative Barreto.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think a couple things, Dan. Well, first of all, as mentioned, food and cabins, warm places to stay, and then also that the children, they made friends there that they hadn't. So how large are these groups, and what are the facilities needed to take care of this program?
Super question, Madam Chair and Representative Barreto. I think it probably varies across state how many students would attend. A lot of the camps will hold a couple hundred people, but our model is to have four classrooms together. That's a good size. It's a big enough size that you get some diversity in there. It's not too big that you start to lose track. You don't get a chance to meet every kid in that amount of time. And so about, 100, 120, 130 kids. And plus staff, and then high school students if you have them. So, in terms of facilities, cabins with heat is really good, especially when you get to the early springs and the late falls. So we need that. And then a commercial, food service facility, so that we can make sure that we're providing good home cooked meals that meet all the requirements for the National School Lunch Program and that are also plentiful and keep kids going. They're so much more active than they're accustomed to being that they chow down.
So a lot of these are usually residential summer camps.
Yes, they're typically residential summer camps. In our case, we don't own any of them. We just lease them. Because we're in shoulder season midweek, we tend to add a lot of value to the camp because they couldn't rent out their facility to someone else. But I think that Nancy Bales at Gray Family Foundation brought up an important point, and that is that overhead to keep a camp running is the days are over when a camp could be a summer camp and that's all it could be, because the cost of fuel, the cost of deferred maintenance on these facilities is significant. And I really appreciate the Gray Family Foundation for stepping up and recognizing that facilities are really difficult to raise money for, especially things like septic. Nobody wants their name on a plaque that's commemorating a septic system, but they're critical infrastructure pieces. So I think one of the things that we really need to look at looking forward is as we're partnering with these camps, and we do have long-term partnerships with the camps, we need to make sure that we're a strong partner that can be a supportive partner.
Okay. Representative Brett, I'm sorry I interrupted you. Did you have a follow-up with this?
No. Well, I didn't, except that when he was talking, I was thinking about this, and $22 million I was wondering what the portion of that $22 million would go to the facilities, and then if it wouldn't make sense to purchase for facilities that could be used for this year-round in this program.
Madam Chair, Representative Breda, I think that's a really important question we need to look at moving forward. I don't have an answer or an opinion, but I think that purchasing or possibly partnering with there may be landowners out there, public or private, that might be great partners moving forward, especially when we think of the question of the rural areas, some of the farther afield areas that may not have a lot of infrastructure in place. So I think it's a great question for us to consider.
Thank you. Other questions, Representative?
Two, I think. One, Bearden? Both easy. I think I missed. Who provides the kind of oversight of the program? Is it in terms of, is it whether or not it's meeting its educational goals?
On the state level, you mean, or?
Madam Chair, Representative Bearden, I guess I'll have to just speak truly from my own experience, because we're housed in an ESD, then the accountability structure goes through that system and then also through the component districts that we serve. So we have an advisory committee that's representatives from each of our school districts that we serve that provides a level of oversight, but then there's also just the relationship between us and the school district to ensure that they're satisfied with the programming. We have evaluation processes in place where we communicate with them. In terms of the state level, I'm not aware of anything specific to outdoor school other than the health regulations that regulate the facilities and the school lunch regulations that regulate the food service. So there's oversight there, but in terms of an umbrella or a blanket, I'm not sure it's there.
Thank you, Representative.
Is the intent to have a sort of a common curriculum? I've always assumed that there was, and now I'm beginning to wonder.
I think there's a common curriculum insofar as we're serving schools, and there's a common set of curriculum standards for schools. But I think I sort of feel like there's an opportunity here to really look at curriculum across the state and see what to be able to both meet the needs and desires of the local community, but also look at how are we serving the broader educational goals of the state.
Well, so I'm concerned about the person that contacted you that had no information about outdoor schools, and how is that person going to, you know, get to understand this rich history that you have? I mean, you know, will they know to lay the milk cartons down on the table when they're empty? You know, that's important. Right. And I'm being a little silly, but so I hope that somehow that becomes part of the plan, that we can integrate and learn from each other.
I hope so too.
And then the second question, you mentioned line 14, page 1, that you're going to talk about soil, water, plants, and animals. Should we throw air in there as well? Or?
I think so. I hate to be exclusive. I don't mean to be flippant either, but...
Yeah, Mr. Campbell, it deals with those things,
yeah.
So he can answer that question.
That'd be great.
Yes.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Madam Chair.
Okay. Any other questions? Because I know that there are going to be some amendments to this, correct?
So I have a question.
There's a suggestion. Okay, we've got about 5 minutes. Representative Hack, then Representative Barreto.
Madam Chair, thank you. Is it true that there are some for-profit groups that are offering outdoor school now? I know that we have locally, we have like Camp Tadmore, OMSI puts on several. So there would be, my understanding was that there would be a list composed of organizations that offer outdoor school, and then OSU Extension would be taking a look at those and providing kind of a list and working with those stakeholders that would be offering. I think it's important that folks know that there are groups out there offering these that are for profit, and schools hire them to bring kids and run the programs. I mean, then they bring their volunteers. I went with both of my kids as a chaperone, and I agree with you on the heat, by the way. But, you know, those are also for-profit groups, and so I wanted to make sure that we did address that.
Madam Chair, Representative Hack, yeah, my understanding is that there are a lot of different models for providers around the state, and certainly around the country. That's the second part of your question. I don't think I can answer, because that has more to do with kind of the bill in the amendments and that sort of thing, the rollout of it. But yeah, OMSI is a really strong active player in the state. Some of the camps themselves, whether they're for-profit or nonprofit, provide programming to schools, and then there's actual schools who do their own in-house programming and teachers. So it's very varied, and I think that's strong.
Yeah. Thank you.
Okay, any other questions for the panel? Okay. Thank you very much. I appreciate that. Okay. Was there anybody else who was going to speak on outdoor school? Would you like to do something very quickly? Thank you, Mr. Campbell. Before
Madam
you rush to the bookstore.
Again, for the record, my name is Craig Campbell, and to answer the question that Madam Chair, Representative Reardon, the idea between the OSU extension is to have common elements to a curriculum that can be used to evaluate the grant process. So there will be consistent elements throughout the state. It doesn't dictate everything that has to be within the program, but it does have certain critical elements that need to be a part of it. And Madam Chair, Representative Hack, for instance, an OMSI program, they're not for profit. They do offer it. I have not heard of for profit, but we'll take a look at that and find out how that would work into the kind of the milieu here. So we'll check on that. Our envision is that it be through ESDs, school districts, schools, and nonprofits. But I'll look into that for you and
Great.
Get back to you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Any other questions? Okay, with that, we close the public hearing on House Bill 2648. Okay. And I open a work session on possible introduction of committee measures.
After me?
Yes, sir.
Chair Doherty, I move that the following LCs be introduced as committee bills. LC 3369, dated January 21st, 2015. LC 3367, dated February 3rd, 2015. And LC 3370, dated January 28th, 2015.
Okay, Rep. Frederick moves the following LCs be introduced as committee bills. LC 3369, dated January 21st, 2015. LC 3367, dated February 3rd, 2015. And LC 3370, dated January 28, 2015. Is there any discussion? And these are the ones, remember, you don't have to agree, you don't have to vote for them. Anything is just the introduction of the bills. Okay. If there's no further discussion, is there any objection? Okay. If not, the measures are introduced as committee bills. Thank you very much. Okay. With that, I close the House Education Committee. Thanks much. House Education Committee. Thanks much. I close the